listening to FBC Perspective, a podcast from First Baptist Church, Kelowna.
Hello from First Baptist Church in Kelowna. This is Pastor Kevin Green, and I'm your host. I'd like to welcome you to our Perspectives podcast, where we talk about things that help us live better lives. Our guest today is Melissa Holman. Melissa is a mental health professional. She specializes in mental health and substance use education. She has a bachelor's and master's degree in social work and completed a fellowship in addictions social work. Last, but I would say definitely not least, Melissa is also a mom who works at home. And during this outbreak, her whole family has joined her there. I'm sure she's just so happy about that. Welcome, Melissa. It's so good to have you here on the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I'm hiding in my daughter's bedroom because it was the quietest room in the house right now.
That sounds like a great strategy. And it's, I can see it. Our listeners won't. It's very pink. So that's wonderful. At the time of this recording, we're all practicing physical distancing because we're in the middle of this coronavirus pandemic. And a lot of us are trying to cope, trying to live with some kind of regularity, maybe trying to keep it together. But it's challenging because we're at home and a lot has changed. And it seems like ages ago that I actually shook someone's hand or went out in public without any worries or concerns. And now I'm suspicious when I see someone coming on the sidewalk. I have to get out of the way. And many people aren't working. A lot of people are probably scared. And we don't know exactly when or how this thing is going to end. It really raises a lot of issues about health, especially mental health, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, I think that this is an unprecedented thing. We have never been through a pandemic before, or at least I haven't. And so I think that we are experiencing something and our bodies are reacting to something that we are not experts at. Anytime that we are experiencing something for the first time, I think that we experience anxiety or distress. And I think that when you add that layer of uncertainty and health concerns, and all of kind of the important measures that are in place, it can really affect the way that our mental health is experienced.
So you said something that I found really interesting. You say our bodies are reacting, and then you said mental health. Are they like, how are they connected?
So that's a great question. So our whole being, so our brain, our body, you know, our emotions, they're all interconnected. And so the way that we experience emotion actually sometimes will show up in our bodies. So I think an example of that would be for me, when I'm feeling anxious, I actually notice that I hold it in my jaw. So my jaw feels tight.
Yeah. Because I feel some stuff in my chest sometimes. And my body's telling me I'm stressed and my mind maybe doesn't know it.
Exactly. And I think that it's such an interesting thing because we live in a world or in a society that doesn't actually do great with emotions. We've categorized them into good and bad emotions. And so there's very few emotions that our society says, okay, you can feel that way. They're basically like happy and okay, satisfied maybe.
Yeah.
And right. And the reality is we are humans that have a full spectrum of emotions and we will feel those full spectrum of emotions in our lifetime, throughout our day, sometimes every, you know, within an hour right now, especially.
So I know as we were thinking about this podcast, we were talking before about mental health. I wonder if you could comment on actually what mental health is, because I feel like there might be some misunderstandings about that. Like it's not connected to mental illness. It's connected to physical health. We all have to pay attention to it, I think. Can you maybe define that a bit for us?
Yeah, for sure. I actually pulled a definition off of the website mentalhealth.gov because I thought it would be important to kind of focus that. So they define mental health as, first of all, everybody has it. This is part of our health. So mental health includes our emotional, psychological, and social well-being. It affects how we think, feel, and act. It also helps to determine how we handle stress, relate to others, and make choices. So mental health is important at every stage of our life. They go on to talk about there's different things that can help shape our mental health. And so those are things like our biology. So we can think about our genes and our brain chemistry, our life experience. So whether we've had really supportive family growing up or whether we've experienced traumas, our family history of mental health is a big piece of it. And then I also added our environmental and social factors. So, you know, what is going on in our world and how does our society react to that? And that it really affects us.
So in other words, this is something that we're all concerned about, like physical health, right?
Exactly.
It's a thing we all need to be worried about. Yeah. And actually, one of the things that you said in your definition was the social, psychological, and emotional aspects. And I mean, right now, I think especially of the social aspect and how challenging that is, because I know that in times of stress, people actually like to socialize and it's healthy. Well, they may not, but it's healthy to socialize and we lean on other people, right? That's what we need to do. That's challenging it now, isn't it?
It really is, right? And I think that it's one of the most amazing things of how we're made is that we are made to connect. And connection actually can be something that helps us feel calmer if we're connecting with somebody that's calm. We have this thing called mirror neurons. And so it means that if we are connecting, so if let's take my children, for example, if they're feeling kind of stressed out by whatever is going on in their world, and they come to me and I am calm and I can react, you know, by helping them solve their problem, by helping them listen to what's happening, to be able to maintain my own, you know, anxiety levels, that actually helps them be able to decrease their anxiety levels. And the opposite of that is true. If we are anxious and we go to somebody that's like, oh my goodness, it is terrible, and their whole body kind of reacts to that, we become more anxious.
And I think of self-awareness with this because I don't want to say this is a rule, but there's some people who say, oh, I'm not worried about this. This is just, you know, this is all overblown. And it seems like to me there's different ways of dealing with fear. It's like dismissing it or going overboard, right?
Yeah.
So
I would love to actually be able to talk about a model of why we might do that, if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So there is a model that was created by a man named Dr. Dan Siegel. So he is a psychiatrist. He's also an author. He's written a lot of books about parenting, and he's a professor at UCLA. So he came up with this concept called the window of tolerance. And so I'm going to tell you, first of all, that this is something I talk about with clients a lot. I talk about it a lot when I'm teaching, and normally it's something that I draw. And so I'm going to do my best to describe it to you verbally.
For sure.
Okay. So the idea of window of tolerance is that we all have this zone that we are able to function best in. And so it's the space where we can think clearly, where we feel settled in our brain and our body. It's where we can react rationally. It's where we can easily feel our feelings and we can empathize with others. It's kind of like the version of our best self. And every person's window has a different width to it. So that's, it's based on the things that we just talked about. So based on our life experience, our biology, you know, our family history, our environment, all of those things determine our width. Now, when we are in times of stress and distress, and so that is defined differently for every person, we could think about that maybe as triggers. We could also think about it as a global pandemic. We can get kicked out of this window. So when this happens, our bodies disconnect from the part of our brain that thinks rationally, that can plan, that can think kind of forward to, you know, maybe when this is all over.
Yeah.
We kind of lose contact with that brain. And we either go out the top of our window or we're going to go out the bottom of our window. And again, life experience dictates which way we go. we don't have a lot of choice about how our body reacts. And I think that that is a really important piece to understand, because I think often we blame ourselves for how we experience stress.
So what's the difference between the top of the window and the bottom?
Yeah, great question. So let's talk first about the top of the window. And so the top of the window in this model is called hyperarousal. It is determined by a part of our nervous system called the sympathetic nervous system. And what this incredible piece of our brain is meant to do is actually to help us go into fight or flight mode. So this is the piece where, like, you know, if you were out for a hike and a bear showed up, this is the space that's like, we're putting everything into the ability to run away or fight this bear.
Or the last can of soup.
Or the last can of soup. You got it, right? It's the space where people aren't thinking rationally, but they're trying to survive.
Or the last toilet paper, I guess it could be more realistically, like that's more important than soup.
Yeah, you will. Yeah, absolutely, right? So I think that some of the ways that we experience being in this hyper arousal state, we might experience anxiousness. We might experience anger. We might experience being frightened, being terrified, being overwhelmed. And other people might experience us as being aggressive, as being anxious, as being obsessive, or being controlling.
Okay.
And I can think of like multiple times in the last week where I have been in that space, right?
Yeah, like, I think I've been there too.
Right? Trying to plan every detail.
Yeah.
Or, you know, not being able to sleep because I'm just like feeling so amped.
Oh, so that's the top. That's hyperarousal, is not being able to sleep.
Yeah, it's part of that, right? Okay, that sense of sort of feeling...
Yeah, I've found that difficulty sleeping lately. And it's funny because sometimes I feel like my body knows me better than my mind does, right? It's like, oh, my body's telling me something. I didn't think I was stressed. Maybe I am.
Totally. Yeah. I think we see that too, like adults, certainly, but we see it a lot in kids. Like my 10-year-old, she's really experiencing that, right? Where she's waking up multiple times a night. And she doesn't outwardly look anxious, but you know that there's something going on for her.
Right. And so what's the bottom of the window, like the lower window? Did you say upper and lower?
Okay. Yep, upper and lower. So the bottom side, we would think of that, we call it hypoarousal.
Right.
So H-Y-P-O.
Yeah.
And so that is activated by our parasympathetic nervous system. And we can think about that as the space where we go to freeze mode. So if you think of fight or flight being up and freeze being down.
Right.
And so that can look like, we can experience that, like feeling empty, feeling shut down, feeling disconnected. And other people, when we're looking at somebody that's in that zone, they look withdrawn, they look quiet, they look hard to reach. They look like they're being inactive or emotionless. I think that we can think about this space as being like that zoned out place. Maybe where we're like endlessly scrolling on our phones.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yes.
It's maybe the space where we only want to eat junk food because our body is looking for that like spike of sugar to get us back into our.
So I'm in both worlds, I guess.
We are, and you know what? We all are. Hmm. It's like in times of stress and distress, we can go back and forth between them.
So how do we regulate that? Like, is there a way to manage that so we stay in the right frame of the window?
Yeah. So some of this is going to be determined by our biology and our experience, right? And so sometimes we are going to be able to notice when we're getting to the upper or lower, window in our window of tolerance and be able to catch it before we're too far gone.
Yeah.
Some of it is going to be like, oh, I can just feel like I'm dipping a toe into that, say, hyperspace. Mm. And sometimes we're going to experience that we're pretty far gone. And when we're pretty far gone into those spaces, our bodies have incredible ways of regulating them as long as we allow them.
Okay. So
it might be things like you're teary and you start crying. And letting yourself actually just do that. Often people will say there's this cathartic part of crying, right? That you feel better afterwards. Sometimes it might look like your body wanting to move. And so doing a workout or going for a walk or a run.
But you're saying that if I feel like crying, I should just let her rip. Just like, yeah, go
as
for
long
it.
As
just have an ugly cry.
Just have an ugly cry. It's
okay.
Awesome.
Good. Okay. I'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes it's going to be weird things that make you have an ugly cry, right? Like I had from my daughter's teacher this week that was like kind of it was before I thought I was going to get one. And it was like, my whole body was like, oh, I'm so overwhelmed. I don't know how we're going to handle all this. And I just had an ugly cry and I was able to actually just move on with the rest of my day.
That's good. I'm going to try that.
Right. Okay. Other things, you could have a nap.
Yeah.
You could do kind of things that feel comforting. And so, you know, like maybe putting on the, you know, most comfortable clothes or getting under a comfortable blanket or kind of doing things to soothe ourselves. And then the other one that we had already touched on, this is connection.
Right.
And so being able to connect with other people, healthy people. I think sometimes we get used to some people get used to kind of being in this hyper or hypo aroused state that they almost seek out anxiety to match how they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, okay. So the connection part is really interesting. And I know that maybe I should ask this because I don't know actually. Is a connection over Zoom or over phone as good as an in-person connection, which we can't do right now?
Yeah. So the short answer is no, but it's also good enough.
Right.
And so in this time where we cannot connect physically, we need to look for what is good enough.
Right. Right. Okay. And so like things like Zoom, texting, all that sort of stuff that we maybe thought, oh man, this stuff is just too much, is our friend now. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Yeah, it is so funny, right? But there's also things that I think that we are using like our friends right now that just still aren't. And we got to be careful how we use them. So I think that social media is a really good example of that.
Right.
It's a space that we can go to feel connected, but it's also a space that can make us feel more anxious. It's a space where we can get misinformation. It's a space that is sort of created to foster this kind of like never-ending cycle of
information. Yeah. I was going to say like it's got this idea of a feed, right? We're always fed stuff. And I wonder about actually what you think about us controlling that feed as far as the news goes, because I want to read the news and I'm like, where's something other than COVID that I can read about? Anything.
Yeah,
I mean, I really enjoyed watching the Queen speak because that was something kind of different, right? But should we regulate that?
Yeah. So this I think is actually really important because I think it's really important for us to recognize that especially news headlines are written in a way to catch our eye. They're written in a way so that we will, you know, click on whatever that news story is to read it. They're written in a way to make us feel extreme feelings, right?
Right.
And so I think that in a time like this, it's really important for us to be paying attention to where we're getting our news from. And so being able to take a moment to step away maybe from the computer and say, okay, so where is the best information going to come from? I think that we have a really incredible example that's happening right now in British Columbia from Dr. Bonnie Henry. I think she's giving us all this like masterclass in leadership.
Yeah, she is.
Right? Not only in like just being giving us honest information, but also in how she delivers it. Calm, present, connected.
Right.
So I think that, you know, being able to maybe limit your consumption to like her update or going to a website like the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. I think that those are some really important ways that we can actually help regulate the amount of information that's coming in. And it's okay to take a break. You don't need to read the news every day.
No, exactly. Yeah. And what about exercise and physical activity? Mm. Does that help with the mental health aspect?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's some things that are definitely important that we need to pay attention to. So when we are kind of in this fight or flight or freeze mode, we might start doing things that are the opposite of helpful just because our body's kind of in survival. So being able to do things like exercise, and that doesn't necessarily have to be like a crazy intense exercise that's out of your norm, but even like getting outside and going for a walk. Mm-hmm. If you're somebody that, you know, already has an exercise routine, sticking to that routine, making healthy choices around food is super important, because that really helps regulate our emotions. You know, there are people that when they experience stress, they eat more food than they should, or junk food. That, and there's other people that don't really eat at all, right. They have the opposite experience. And so sometimes being able to make sure that, hey, did I actually have lunch? And you might feel better once you've had some healthy food.
So there's something that I know about Melissa, and I'm sure you won't mind this, but Melissa is like a sourdough expert. And I've noticed that a lot of people are baking bread now. I mean, I'm doing it too. And it's just such a different relationship with food. I think that's been very helpful. I mean, I'm seeing people all over Facebook putting up pictures of bread.
Are you noticing? I know. Yes. I've had so many people reach out to me to find out, you know, what's the best website, or how do I start a sourdough starter? Or, you know what I think I love about baking bread is that it is slow.
It's slow. Yeah.
And especially sourdough bread is really slow. And I think that it is so regulating, because I can't make it go faster.
You have to feed it like a baby.
Yeah, exactly. It's a pet. Mine is named Eliza. Actually, I have two, Eliza and what is our second one's name? Herbert, I think we named him, something like
You've
that.
You've forgotten the name Humphrey. Of your second child.
His name is Humphrey. Sorry. Okay. He's like my fifth child.
I only have one. Mine is Knox Mountain Starter. So,
well, you chose an easier name.
I did choose an easier name. And so eating's one thing, and having you know, healthy diets and being aware of that, but I also wonder if we need to be more aware of alcohol consumption at this point, because I know that I don't believe, anyway, you're an addictions person expert, so you might correct me here, but I don't think people actually decide that they're going to be an addict. I think it sneaks into their lives at times of stress, and they create a habit, and they start dealing with stress and anxiety with different things, and that creates an addiction. So do we have to be careful about our consumption of alcohol or other things right now while we're feeling stressed?
Yeah. So thank you for prefacing it like that. Nobody chooses to be an addict.
Right.
No one chooses to deal with addiction. I think that we often in our world, at the beginning when we were talking about how in our world we don't do well with emotion.
Yes.
We have things that help us regulate emotion that may or may not be healthy. And I think that substances are one of those things. I can, you know, think about how many times even I have joked about like, oh, if only I could have a glass of wine, or, you know, just recognizing that it does something in our body. So if we think about alcohol, for example, it can help people actually calm their bodies down. And so I think that sometimes it's like, you know, that Staples commercial that was like, was it Staples that had the easy button? Well, that was easy.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes there are things that we turn to in times of stress that are like the easy button.
Yeah, you're right.
And so I think that substances can be that. I think that food can be that. I think that, you know, overconsumption of screens can be that. There's so many ways that we have been kind of socially taught to cope that actually in the long term aren't healthy.
So what are you doing with your family? What are some strategies that you and your family are putting in place to deal with this increased anxiety at this time?
Yeah. So I can tell you, first of all, some days we do awesome and some days we don't. And that is so normal right now. Right? Like, this is an unprecedented time. And so whatever you're doing probably isn't wrong. So I just never want people to feel like, oh, I didn't follow the script and that's why my life is falling apart. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we are doing things like trying to have some sort of schedule. It's really helpful. We're also, you know, not being as concerned about things like how clean our house is, Did you know my kids get every ounce of homework assigned to them done? We're having some flexibility right now, you know, and we're making sure that we're doing things like get outside, that we're connecting in healthy ways. And I think especially parents, we need to be recognizing our own kind of self-care in this, because we need to be able to react for our children. So that those mirror neurons, we need to be calm enough to be able to handle their stress. And we can only do that if we look after ourselves first.
So thank you for sharing that and understanding that none of us are doing this perfectly. Are there some strategies that we could reach for as families and individuals?
Yeah. So I think that I'm going to give, is it okay if I give kind of two?
I would love that. Yeah.
Okay. So there are all the things that we just talked about, like connection and taking breaks from social media and eating and exercising and connection, having routine. But then, you know, there are some other strategies that we can use. And in the mental health world, we call these grounding strategies. When we start feeling like we're at the edges of that window of tolerance. So the first one that I want to offer, and there's hundreds of them. I mean, if you Google grounding exercises, you'll have hundreds come up. But the first one is around breathing. And so being able to regulate our breath actually gives our brain the signal that we are safe. And when it gives us that signal, we can come back into the window of tolerance.
So you're telling me that my Apple Watch is smarter than I thought because it keeps telling me to breathe.
Yes, yes, 100%.
Wow.
And so the coolest thing, okay, so I'm going to teach you this breath that sometimes when we teach it to kids, we talk about blowing out a birthday candle.
Okay.
So you're going to take a deep breath in through your nose, and then you're going to blow out through your mouth longer than your breath in. When it's audible like that, it's even better. So the coolest thing about this is that breath out actually activates our parasympathetic nervous system to bring us down out of that hyperarousal state back into our window of tolerance.
And honestly, like even that one breath was good.
Isn't that, and sometimes it takes multiple breaths. My kids often say to me, do you like breathe like that all the time? I breathe much more like that at home than I do at work. Right. But it's this very cool strategy that's simple, because when we're overwhelmed, we need simple.
Would you employ that strategy when you're at the up top of the window or bottom, or just like at on a schedule, like just like, oh, it's every hour I should do that breathing? How would you do that?
So I think when we first are learning new strategies, it's really important that we practice them. We practice them when we're calm, so that when we are in a place of being either up or down in that window, we can access it.
Okay.
I think that breathing is really grounding on either end of that spectrum. It's probably going to be most effective when we're in the top end of that spectrum, right. Just because we're activating that part of our brain that's going to bring us back down.
Yeah. And it makes us slow down, right? Because we're in that top end, our breathing is elevated.
You got it. That's exactly what happens, because our body's getting ready to fight.
Exactly.
And so our heart rate is raised. Like there's all that stuff going on.
Right.
Yeah.
What were the other strategies that you had? Did you say you had four?
Yeah. I'm going to give you two.
Okay.
Okay. So the other one is called anchoring. And so this one is a little bit more involved, but it just has a few more steps, I guess, is really what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So the idea of anchoring is that we want to be able to recognize the emotions that our body is bringing up without being swept away by them. So if we can think about like a boat in a storm that drops anchor, it's not that it gets rid of the storm around it. It just means that the boat isn't swept away in the storm.
Right. Okay? That makes sense.
So that's kind of the way I kind of remember it for myself.
Yeah, well, we can't control the COVID outbreak.
You got it.
Right. So we gotta be anchored.
Exactly. And it's even the sense of like giving permission that we're allowed to feel however we feel. Right. It doesn't, I think sometimes people use strategies to try and like change their anxiety into happiness. And that just becomes another one of those maladaptive coping mechanisms.
It's not very, doesn't seem like it leads to good self-knowledge if you did that.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah. So anchoring, the process of anchoring. So first of all, if it feels safe to do so, you would close your eyes or you'd kind of just soften your gaze, maybe by looking down. You would just take a moment and connect with whatever emotion you're feeling. And so you maybe try to put a name to it, maybe try and see where it's showing up in your body. Okay. So that's, you know, like if I'm feeling anxious and I notice, oh man, I'm really holding my jaw really tensely, or I'm feeling that in my chest. So just take a moment to name it, see where it shows up. And then if we're sitting down, I want you to take a moment to sit up straight. Notice how it feels. I want you to push your feet into the ground. And so this is a process of coming into our bodies. You know, sometimes we don't pay attention to what's going on in our body. And so we're sitting up straight. We're pushing our feet into the ground. We're still feeling the feeling that we're feeling. And then I want you to push your hands together, roll your shoulders, kind of just bring some movement. So it's kind of the idea that we still have some control of our body, even when we're feeling these feelings. And then I want you to open your eyes and kind of look around the room. Maybe notice what color the walls are. You know, notice maybe, is there anything in the room? So it's this process of being able to connect.
Sorry, I just have to come back. You kind of lost me there. I was so into it.
Yeah.
No.
I love it.
Yeah. That was great. I was looking around. Okay.
So that's something that we can do, right? And again, it could be, you know, 30 seconds long. It could be 10 minutes long, right? We could use it sort of as a mindfulness practice.
Wow. That is amazing. Well, Melissa, that's been really helpful. And I think you've given us some really important things to consider and maybe some changes to make as we navigate life at this time.
Mm.
So I really want to thank you for giving us your insights and coming on this podcast. I wonder if you have any last words.
Well, first of all, it was my absolute pleasure to connect.
Thank you.
I do think it's really important to recognize that sometimes these strategies that we talked about are not going to be enough, right? Mm-hmm. Like this is a really big and anxious time for people, and it could trigger, you know, some underlying mental health concerns that maybe you already had. And so I wanted to be able to give a couple of spaces where people can reach out if they're feeling like things are out of control for
them. That's a great idea. Thank you.
So you're welcome. So I think a family doctor is a space to connect. Even phoning 811 is a space to connect. There's also a crisis line within the interior, and I'm going to try to give this number slowly and more than once.
And can I just let me say this? I'm not sure who's listening, but this is in Kelowna, BC. So in case you're not in BC, this might not apply to you, but you should reach out to your local mental health care and healthcare providers.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. Yep. So this is for the interior of British Columbia. And so the crisis line number here is 1-888-353-2273. So again, it is 1-888-353-2273.
So if I called that number, what would they do? Like what happens?
That's a great question. So you would connect with a human, first of all, which is so important.
Okay.
And they would probably give you some strategies in the minute to help manage what's going on. And if that wasn't, you know, working, they would help direct you to a space to get help.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. And thank you for listening. And I hope that you feel better equipped to deal with life, this new way of life that we hope is temporary. We hope you can deal with this better than you did before. And it's been great to talk about things that help us live better lives. I look forward to connecting with you on our next podcast. Until next time, keep the faith and live in hope.
Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe so that you can catch all our future episodes. You can search for us as FBC Perspective on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.